From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. $2,000 for a flu swab, $3,000 for three stitches, and a whopping $8,600 for an ambulance ride. These are just a few examples NHPR listeners shared after reporter Casey McDermott's story on surprise medical bills, especially a practice called balanced billing. These shocking amounts often result after a patient receives care from an out-of-insurance network provider, even when treatment occurs at an in-network facility. Some hospitals use these outside contracting physicians to staff certain functions, especially emergency rooms, but the high charges that may result are causing an uproar, and in New Hampshire, there's now legislation to prohibit balanced billing. Today in The Exchange, we find out more, and let's hear from you. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have two guests in studio. Josh Kateff is here. He's a New Hampshire resident with personal experience with this issue. Josh sat on a state study committee on balanced billing. And Josh, it's good to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Casey McDermott, reporter for NHPR. You can read Casey's extensive coverage of balanced billing in New Hampshire on our website. And Casey, thank you for helping us out. We appreciate it. Give us your best definition, Casey, please, of balanced billing.
So the balance part of it basically means the outstanding balance that would not be covered by a patient's insurance provider. So say I'm a patient, I go into the emergency room, I get, you know, some kind of procedure done, I go home. Perhaps I have checked ahead of time to see that the hospital that I'm going to is in my insurance network. What's more difficult often for patients is knowing whether each individual provider that they might see in that hospital is covered by their insurance network. So maybe the ER physician that treated me, and this is actually the case of some of the sources that I've talked to for these stories, the ER physician may not be covered by a patient's insurance network. And so a patient might end up with a bill long after they've gone home that they were not aware that they were perhaps at risk for, of sometimes hundreds, sometimes thousands of dollars, because their insurance carrier is not contracted with that individual physician or vice versa.
So the balance is, this is the balance of what you owe Casey McDermott.
Yeah.
After the insurance has kicked in. So people come to the hospital, often in an emergency situation, mm-hmm. And the ER doc who treats them may or may not be in the network, even though the hospital is. Mm-hmm. So the company that that ER doc contracts with sends you a bill for a lot of money, and it's a surprise.
Yep.
How did this happen to you, Josh?
Yeah, it's funny that Casey mentions that, because that was actually our first introduction, was exactly that emergency room after an unfortunate avocado slicing incident. We went to Concord Hospital, the local hospital, and ended up weeks later with a bill from an out-of-network physician, which was strange because the physician that the bill came from wasn't even the physician that we saw, which was especially frustrating. So numerous calls back and forth between the hospital telling me that it's my problem with the insurance company, and then the insurance company telling me that's just the way it is, leaving me incredibly frustrated to the point where finally I just, after 45 minutes on the phone with my insurance company, hung up and called back and said, this can't be how it is. And I got a new representative who said, oh, no, of course not. We'll take care of that. And that was my first lesson in just being an advocate for yourself in the healthcare system.
Yeah.
Depends on who you talk to, you get different answers, which is tough also.
Yeah, I've had that experience with insurance companies too. The third person I talked to, after going through the whole phone tree and getting increasingly frustrated, says, oh, no, do it this way. How did you realize that this was a case of what Casey's talking about, Josh, balanced billing?
Yeah, so as soon as I saw that out-of-network part, it kind of hit home, right? It's something that I'd heard about but not experienced. And when you experience it firsthand, you realize that anybody who experiences the issue realizes instantly how insane it is. The consumer has literally no control over it. We don't choose our emergency room physicians. We don't choose our facility-based providers, which we'll get into later. I think that's the point that people need to realize, and legislators are starting to realize, that the consumers aren't making bad decisions choosing out-of-network people. They're not making the decision at all and having this forced on them.
Well, that's the thing too, Casey, because we're all told these days, you know, choose a provider who's in-network, talk before you have a procedure about, you know, the costs incurred. And I've had those conversations with the nurses and so forth. How much is this going to cost? How much is this going to be covered? But balanced billing kind of navigates this area where you don't have that much control.
Exactly. And I think in particular, the emergency room setting is a place where this practice is especially prevalent for all of the reasons that we've talked about. It was interesting when I was reporting my story, I talked to people who described the ER as you know, kind of an economy unlike anything else that we encounter in our day-to-day lives. So I had one researcher kind of put it into these terms in that, you know, say you walk into a coffee shop and they charge you $1,000 for a cup of coffee. You're never going back to that coffee shop again. And you're probably going to tell your friends not to go back there again as well. Whereas in the emergency room, A, you often don't know how much that cup of coffee is going to cost in this metaphor. And you have little choice over kind of who is involved in preparing that cup of coffee for you. You don't have the same kind of transparency in pricing that we get even in kind of most other parts of our day-to-day life. Plus, there's all of these kind of intersecting players that are involved, particularly in healthcare. We talked about there's the physician, there's the facility, and then there's the insurance company, and then there's the patient. So it's all of these kind of overlapping interests that at the end of the day, it can be very hard for patients to navigate.
And from what I've read, Casey, the emergency room is where this especially takes place mm-hmm. because, as you describe, it's an emergency situation. Mm-hmm. You don't want to spend time arguing over who's in network and who isn't when, you know, you have appendicitis-like pains in your stomach. We're going to talk in a couple minutes to a national researcher who's looked at where this comes up at hospitals around the country, the situations in which it comes up most frequently. I want to remind our listeners that you can join us. The email is exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. You know, in advance of the show, we received a lot of comments from our listeners on this. Here's an email that came in from Shannon. My husband went to the ER last year in Seabrook. They moved into Portsmouth Hospital and admitted him. He was there for about 2 days. Portsmouth Hospital was in network, but the doctor who made rounds, as well as ultimately discharged my husband, was not in network. So we were charged over $1,600. I contacted my insurance company, who said this was legal and had applied it to my out-of-pocket deductible for the year. We were never told by the hospital. We were never given an option to have an in-network doctor. Ultimately, we felt duped and nervous to go to the ER again. Is that how you felt, Josh? You know, next time I cut myself or something happens, I might not go to the ER.
Yeah, and that's the worst possible reaction, right, is when people start to deny themselves medical care because they're afraid of bills like this. I mean, nobody wants that, I would hope.
Go ahead, Casey, your thoughts on this email that we received from Shannon.
Yeah, I think that and just to kind of preface this, I reached out to Portsmouth Regional Hospital multiple times throughout my reporting. They did issue some kind of blanket statements explaining that they, you know, for example, the Seabrook Emergency Room is a separate campus. It's not attached to Portsmouth Regional Hospital, but it functions basically like a hospital-based emergency room. And they said that billing for services performed there depends on the services provided. Often those are all billed separately, and that the Seabrook Emergency Room also contracts with other physicians to do those services, but they wouldn't tell me, you know, how many of those physicians are involved in the insurance networks that the hospital themselves contract with. So I think that speaks to the difficulty of if reporters can't get answers from hospitals out of how many of their physicians are in network, that's saying something about how difficult it is for the average patient to get that information.
Well, and speaking of where this takes place in New Hampshire, we got a question from a listener on this. Here's a voicemail left by a listener in the Lakes region.
My name is John, and I live in Laconia, and I would like to know what hospitals in New Hampshire have the balanced billing issue that could lead to unhappy surprises. Thank you.
Well, thank you, John, for the voicemail. And Casey, just judging from your reporting, it seems like this is more of a problem on the seacoast.
That's actually not necessarily the case. So okay. I should clarify that this is something that happens at a number of health facilities to varying degrees. And it can happen in a lot of different settings. And I should say that it doesn't just happen in the emergency room setting. It can also happen, for example, I've read stories about people getting huge bills from anesthetists that they saw that, you know, that's someone who puts you under and you really have no idea that that's that, you know, that physician is involved in your care until after the fact. But I should say that there are kind of degrees to which this occurs. And one of the things that I discovered while I was reporting, which was very interesting, and I think, again, speaks to the kind of murkiness of this system, is so one of the patients that I profiled got a bill from a physicians group that appeared to be local. It was called Owascog Physicians LLC. The patient agreed as part of my reporting to let me examine her bills. And in the course of looking over her bills, I discovered that that company was actually connected to a larger corporation that has come under congressional scrutiny, has come under media scrutiny, has come under legal scrutiny for its balance billing practices, because it's being accused of kind of exploiting this system, billing patients at the highest possible rates, and, you know, billing them, leaving them with these large out-of-network bills. They're contracted, that company, with several hospitals in New Hampshire, including Portsmouth Regional, including Seabrook Emergency Room, Parkland Medical Center in Derry, and a handful of others. So there are companies that may, through their individual practices, leave patients more susceptible to higher bills or might be more prone to issuing them. But this issue in and of itself is something that can occur to varying degrees all over.
I see, all over the state. So taking a look at this nationally, I want to invite now on our program Mark Hall. He's non-resident senior fellow for economic studies at the Center for Health Policy at the Brookings Institute in D.C. And by the way, you can read Mark's research on our website, nhpr.org. And Mark Hall, welcome to The Exchange. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, we've been talking about where balance billing takes place around New Hampshire. How widespread a practice is this nationally, Mark? And where does it seem to happen the most?
Well, it varies a good deal from one state to the next, anywhere from almost 50% of emergency room patient admissions to less than 10% in other places. We don't have good data on New Hampshire, but there's from neighboring states less than 10% of cases in Vermont to maybe a third of cases in Massachusetts to almost half the cases in New York. So that kind of variation is observable, and it has a lot to do with the relationships and among physicians and between physician groups and hospitals and how they do their contracting. But,
well, and if you could clarify that for us, please. And Casey mentioned that, you know, she didn't get a lot of clarity from the hospitals. Our producer also reached out to several hospitals who engage in these practices, trying to get them on the record, and they declined to join us today. Why would a hospital contract out for certain services like, you know, emergency room services, radiology, and so forth? Why not just use the people on staff?
Well, you need to have an orderly process of covering those services. You just can't have, you know, radiologists lined up outside a patient's door saying, pick me, pick me. You have to have, you know, people assigned to cover certain areas of service and certain times of day, and that's best done through a contracting entity. Even though the hospital arranges for that, really the responsibility lies with the physician group that they select. And so the physicians remain independent from the hospital, and that's part of the confusion that, from the patient's point of view, I go to the hospital to be taken care of by doctors and nurses and assistants and the whole package. But behind the scenes, many pieces of that package are, you know, billed separately and contracted separately.
So, Mark, is it, just in your opinion, is it a legitimate way to cover certain needs? Hospitals are busy places. New Hampshire has a labor shortage. I mean, at some level, is this legit?
Well, it strikes me, and I think other people, at least at a common sense level, that if a hospital is going to contract with a particular group of physicians to cover an essential service, they should state in the contract that the physicians need to be part of the same networks. But traditionally, hospitals haven't dictated what physicians do in their private practice as far as contracting. Those contract negotiations are handled separately. Even here at a medical school where I work, the hospital contracts separately from the physicians, and occasionally they'll reach different results, which becomes very disruptive, and they try hard to avoid it. But I think, you know, all common sense says the hospital should do everything it can to get the physicians aligned with the hospital in terms of network participation. But at the end of the day, there's only so much you can do.
Well, and Josh Kateff, as I said earlier, you have personal experience with this, and you sat on that state study committee. Did you hear this sort of element of surprise among members of that study committee, even, you know, not just members of the public like you, but, you know, longtime lawmakers who've looked at healthcare policy for many years?
Sure, sure. And on the study committee, they were very cognizant of not wanting to be involved in rate setting or contract negotiations.
Right.
So Representative Kirk's goal on the committee was to align the incentives to balance the power between the carriers and the providers and the hospitals. What I think is on the Commerce Committee before the study committee, there was some, you know, free markets, business solutions kind of invoked, like let the market handle it. I think the problem here is that, you know, I would love to hear Mark's opinion on this, but the hospitals, from my point of view, don't have incentive to fix this problem. They're listed as in-network. They're getting the customer in the door, and then they're letting the customer fight it out with the insurance company and the actual healthcare provider when they get the bill at the end. So what incentive does the hospital have to remedy this if they're not going to have to pay the balance bill?
Well, Mark, I'd love your thoughts, and I want to let everybody know, too, that we are going to have the lead sponsor of the bill that you mentioned. We can talk to him about some of those, you know, market intervention concerns. But go ahead, Mark. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, there is a certain amount of finger pointing where the if, you know, the bill comes and the insurance company isn't paying for it, your first thought is to blame the insurance company. But the insurance company said, well, we did everything we could. And so then you think, well, what about the hospital? That's the place I picked. And, you know, many patients, you know, most patients have an understanding that is it the hospital in network or not. So I think there is some tendency to look to the hospital to try to do something about it. But again, there's only so much they can do. With regard to physicians, I guess the question there would be, to what extent is this an overt strategy? I mean, there are physician management companies out there promoting the idea of staying out of network simply in order to make more money than joining networks, which I think is certainly a strategy that's likely to cause some pushback or some negative reaction, if not blow up in their face. So each situation differs, and you would have to have a in-depth conversation with all the parties involved in any given market or scenario. But as was said, I mean, everybody recognizes the need to get the patient out of the middle of this and to find some way to resolve this sort of triangulated debate.
Well, and coming up, we will talk about legislation here in New Hampshire to address this. I've got lots of emails I'd love to share with all of you. Keep them coming. Our address is exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Casey, Josh, and Mark, we will be right back. More in a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
I'm Jessica Hunt. I'm a producer for The Exchange. Thank you for listening to the podcast. I'm really excited because I am getting to put together a retrospective about Something Wild. That's another podcast on NHPR. You'll hear it during Morning Edition on Friday mornings. They have been doing that for 20 years, and I am delighted to be able to put together a special episode of The Exchange about Something Wild and their time on the air. But I'm coming to you because I need your help. I need to hear your memories, things that have touched you over the years about Something Wild. Here's the phone number to leave a voicemail, 603-513-7797. Thanks a lot.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, balanced billing. It's a practice used by some New Hampshire hospitals, filling certain staff positions with out-of-network doctors that can lead to extremely high bills for patients. We're hearing from many listeners about this, and you can join them. Send email to exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We've got a national researcher on this, Mark Hall with the Brookings Institute. We've got Josh Kateff. He's a New Hampshire resident who has personal experience with balanced billing and sat on a state study committee on the issue. And Casey McDermott is here, reporter for NHPR. She's done extensive coverage of this. You can check it out at nhpr.org. And all of you joining us now on the phone is Representative Dave Luno. He's a lawmaker from Hopkinton who's sponsoring a bill called HB 1809, which would prohibit balanced billing. And Representative Luno, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Hey, thank you, Lauren. Good to be with you this morning.
So how would this attempt to prohibit balanced billing, Representative Luno?
So thanks. Sure. A great question on that. It actually approaches the problem from three angles. The first part is to provide basically a prohibition of billing the patient for any costs over and above their premium share, their copays that are part of their insurance plan. So it basically prohibits balanced billing the patient from occurring. The next two parts actually go to address the root cause of balanced billing, which is network adequacy requirements. So these are aspects that really fall on the insurance carriers to make sure that they have an adequate group of healthcare providers in their network. So thinking of everybody from surgeons to primary care physicians to anesthesiologists to radiologists to be able to provide the healthcare services that their patients expect to receive under their insurance plan. And then the third element that the bill addresses is it provides for a dispute resolution process should an insurance carrier and a healthcare provider not be able to come up with an agreement on what is reasonable reimbursement for providing those services. So the bill approaches it all three ways.
In testimony on this bill, Representative Luno, the New Hampshire Hospital Association said, quote, "It remains a question if this is a significant issue in our state." How significant do you think it is, Representative Luno?
Well, just from my own the basic constituents from Hopkinton and Concord, I've had people approach me directly that have encountered this problem, and I've worked with them in two ways on this. First, some way to address the acute problem and get their needs satisfied. Sometimes that involves, talking with the insurance carrier, getting them to the right person at the insurance carrier to be able to resolve it. But secondly, through this legislation. So I feel that it probably is a fairly significant problem. It's probably underreported, which may, lead to, questions about how big an issue is it really. I think if somebody is going to be balance billed thousands of dollars for a anesthesia, which obviously they would expect anesthesia to be part of the services covered by insurance, if they're going in for a surgery.
Sure, if the surgery is covered, then you expect the anesthesia before the surgery
to be
covered.
Right, not an optional part of the service.
Well, with us in the studio, Representative Luno, is one of your constituents, Josh Kateff. Again, he sat on the state study committee that ended up coming up with your bill. And Josh told us that during the study committee conversations, some people were concerned about government getting involved in what private entities can and cannot charge. And I wonder what you think about that.
Well, I think that's a really good question. I think the state of New Hampshire has traditionally and continues to be very hands off when it comes to what private entities can charge for their services. In this case, though, we're still that way. The bill does not price set for any of the services, but rather encourages the healthcare, the physicians and the practice groups and the hospitals and the carriers to work together to come up with a reasonable fee, a reasonable reimbursement for those services. And obviously, you know, the state of New Hampshire is a pretty, you know, pretty diverse, you know, going from down in the southern parts of the state where there may be greater competition in certain practice fields, up to the North Country where there may be less competition. So, so that's one of the reasons why network adequacy requirements is so important. That that in fact, the insurance carriers do have to negotiate with these practice groups, like the anesthesiologists, to make sure that that the hospitals up in the North Country have available anesthesiologists to you know, to provide those services.
The Hospital Association says it has concerns about this bill, and we did again. Casey and I both reached out to hospitals to do our coverage. It recommends another approach. It calls more uniform, based on the National Association of Insurance Commissioners model. How open are you at this point, Representative Luno, to make changes in your bills, given the concerns that providers have?
Sure. I think the bill that we've got right here, House Bill 1809, really could serve as the model nationally for this. And I think the study committee that was led by Chairman Kirk did a terrific job looking at really understanding the problem, hearing testimony from all interested parties, looking at a number of different solutions, and then selecting the best one to move forward with in the legislation. You know, I think to change it to go with the model that's been proposed by NCOIL would really take us back. And that model actually requires notification. It's based on notification. So if you know, and I'm sure your listeners would recognize situation, you go into check into a hospital or for a procedure, and somebody comes out with a clipboard and they say just sign at the bottom, and most people just sign at the bottom.
Sure, in an emergency situation, yeah. Go ahead.
Right. But even in a non-emergency situation, too, in an emergency situation, it's even, you know, tougher to understand how that notification works. But basically, it says that that you may receive bills for over and above what your insurance pays.
And, you mentioned NCOIL, Representative Luno. What is that?
So that's the National Conference of insurance legislators.
Gotcha.
And so that's the model policy that they've put out. Really is what's in practice here in New Hampshire right now, which is this notification in fine print that's difficult to read, that's presented when you're right there in the office and the least, you know, ability to make a decision. And it says that they can bill you anything over and above what the insurance pays. And I don't think that's an acceptable solution.
Well, last question for you, Representative Luno. What does the support look like for this bill in the House and Senate?
Well, that's a great question. I was pleased that it passed the House Commerce Committee yesterday in a strong bipartisan 18-2 vote, and we hope to carry that momentum to the House floor in early March, and then it'll go on to the Senate. Obviously, the Senate's a very different chamber than the House, but we hope that the Senate will also recognize that this legislation was developed in a bipartisan manner with substantial testimony and work. And you know, it affects all their constituents as well, and this is a bill that is good for Granite Staters, but it's also good for the healthcare industry as well, because surprise billing isn't good for anybody.
Well, Representative Luno, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Laura. Have a great day.
That's Dave Luno. He's a lawmaker from Hopkinton, again, sponsoring HB 1809, which would prohibit balanced billing. And that's what we're digging into today in The Exchange. Let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. www.lawyerspeak.org. Here's an email that came in before the show from Dan, who says, regarding the topic of unexpected fees for out-of-network suppliers at hospitals, Dan says, I experience this all the time. I live in Keene. Our only local hospital is Cheshire Medical Center. Our issue is that while most tests are covered by our insurance, the radiology supplier who interprets the test results is not covered. They are an out-of-network supplier. And so every time we get an X-ray, MRI, CAT scan, we get this large bill from the radiology company because our insurance won't cover it. However, as far as we can understand, we have no other options here in Keene. That radiology supplier is the one and only one that works with our hospital. We don't have the option to ask someone else to read and interpret the results. So, Dan says, I'm now resigned to the fact that each time this happens, I have to spend a serious amount of time on the phone with our insurance company, writing letters to get this to approve as an in-network expense. Wow, Dan, what a story. Mark, does this sound familiar to you?
It does, and a situation of a less populous location like Keene, I think, really accentuates this. I think it highlights the shortcomings of the alternative bill that the representative was referring to from that national organization that said, well, if you just have patients acknowledge that this is going to happen, then they make that choice. But the patients are often presented with a situation where they don't have a choice or they don't have a reasonable choice. So I think it really does highlight, you know, the reality is faced by patients and, you know, the situation that this does really require a regulatory intervention because the market just isn't going to solve this problem on its own.
Well, it does make you wonder, and obviously I'm not a healthcare economist, Mark, but it does make you wonder why Cheshire Medical Center doesn't hire a radiology interpreter if this is an ongoing problem. It seems like if you offer the test, you should also offer the person who can interpret those tests, no?
Right. So every story is going to have two sides, and there's no way I can know, you know, whether the hospital hasn't put in reasonable efforts to negotiate or whether on the other side there isn't a reasonable interest in reaching a negotiation. Who knows? And maybe there just aren't people locally available. So that's why having, you know, a disinterested public servant look into it and say either, well, this is an inadequate network, and to keep the insurance company's license, they need to find somebody who's available to interpret the X-rays and pay what's required, or to say, well, no, there is nobody available, and so we're going to excuse the insurer, but then look to the out-of-network provider to keep their charges reasonable.
Well, Dan, so, thank you for the email. Yeah, go ahead, Mark. Sorry.
Those judgment calls, you know, those are judgment calls, and we can't make them from a distance. They need somebody to look at the particular case through these kind of dispute resolution mechanisms.
Let's take a call from Hampton. This is Douglas on the line. Hi, Douglas. Go ahead. You're in the air. Welcome.
Hey, well, I practiced at Portsmouth Regional Hospital in other states, and I think in a way you're all nibbling around the edges. You know, the real problem is most people, when they go to the hospital, say they need an appendix out, they expect all the services at the hospital will be covered by their insurance if the hospital says, yeah, we take your insurance. But it's more like going into a automobile shop and getting a bill from the guy who puts the tires on, and, or there's another one, the guy who puts the brakes on, and somebody cleans your window. That's what patients experience when they get out. I've had patients, not at Portsmouth Regional Hospital, but at other hospitals out of state, who got bills from housekeeping and, of course, anesthesia, and they were stunned. They thought their hospital bill was going to be paid by their insurance. You know, Portsmouth is run not locally, but by a major national corporation. And that corporation basically has farmed out emergency room, intensive care units, you name it, hospitalists. None of those things are really controlled by the management of the hospital. Those are private contracts. So various services that those contractors don't want to offer within the hospital just simply don't get offered. The people who work across the street, the doctors who used to go to see their patients, were expressly forbidden to do that because they don't make as much money when they go across the street to the hospital. So they have to stay in their offices, and they can look out their window at their patient's room and know that they can't really enter the hospital to take care of them. So these are forces which we've just kind of come to accept. I don't think we should. I certainly don't think the legislature should.
So it's interesting to hear from you, given your experience with this. I mean, is there an economic rationale for hiring outside contracting doctors if you simply can't find enough radiologists or ER docs or anesthesiologists to adequately cover the 24/7 needs of a hospital? Is there a legit economic reason for this, Douglas?
Well, now you're talking finances, but you know the fact is you can find those doctors. Doctors are trying to come to Portsmouth, but there's only one real big player in town, and that's the HCA. They have some competition from up at Wentworth Douglas or at Exeter, but if the folks at Portsmouth wanted to hire doctors, there are doctors aplenty for that. And in fact, you know, even in hospitals, not so much at Portsmouth, but out of state, if you go in at 1 a.m., and you fell on your head and you need a CAT scan, they'll do the CAT scan. They have the technician there. But your CAT scan will be read in India by the person that hospital is contracted with because he's a cheaper doctor. And that there's no reason that can't come to Portsmouth or New Hampshire. The only reason is, thus far, the finance guys haven't really found the right deal.
Okay, Douglas, really good to hear from you. Thank you very much. And our jaws are kind of dropping here in studio, the idea of your concussion scan being read by someone in India. I just wonder what your thoughts are on this, Josh.
Yeah, so that gets back to your email or from Keen. Again, why is the radiologist who reads that x-ray, why is it hard to find someone in network? That person doesn't have to be on site. Douglas just told us they can be in India, they can be in Concord, they can be in New York City. It's simply because the provider doesn't want to take the time or effort or expense to contract that in-network person.
So it's partly a network adequacy issue, as Representative Luno said, Casey. Is that what you've observed?
Yeah, that's definitely the case. And I think also it's, you know, as Doug alluded to, healthcare is an industry where there are many profit motives inside it. And in addition to the, you know, the motive of wanting to help people and care for people. But at the same time, we're seeing a lot of companies, one of which we talked about earlier in terms of the physician staffing company, but also just companies in general seeing the ability to get more money out of the system because of the way that incentives are kind of stacked in their favor. I also want to note just in terms of the just illustrating some of the kind of difficulties for the average patient to get through this, but also the kind of inconsistencies that people might encounter. So after I wrote a story about that patient's experience that I mentioned at Portsmouth Regional's affiliate in Seabrook, that patient actually had her bill rectified after her story was publicized widely. She received the follow-ups that she was trying to get from the company for months and months that she only got after the story came out. So, you know, that ended up lowering what was initially a $1,600 bill to a $200 bill, which was the regular cost. But my question is, what about all of the other patients who aren't written about?
Well, and coming up, I've got a bunch of emails from other people who contacted us before the show today. And we'll take your calls as well. Exchange@nhpr.org is the email. The phone number, 1-800-892-6477. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, Governor Sununu is here, and we're taking your emails and voicemails in advance. So go to nhpr.org to leave a message. Find out how to leave us a voicemail there at nhpr.org, or just send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. That's tomorrow on our program, live at 9. This hour, a medical billing practice called balanced billing and legislation in New Hampshire to prohibit it. You can send us an email on that as well, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-6477. And Mark, Josh, and Casey, let's go right back to our listeners. Kate's waiting in Walpole. Hi, Kate. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. I had an interesting experience where I got a notice that it was time for me to get a colonoscopy. So I called the insurance company to make sure that they would pay for it. And they said, yes, we will pay for it, but we won't pay for an anesthesiologist. And when I asked them why, I don't remember exactly what they said, but I think what they were saying was that a nurse could give me that kind of anesthesia. So I said, fine. So I called the hospital, and they said, no, we don't use an anesthesiologist. We have a nurse. And I said, okay, fine. I'm all set. And I went in for the colonoscopy, and I was, you know, on the gurney in the hospital gown. The guy was about to give me the anesthesia, and I said, are you an anesthesiologist? And he said, yes. And I said, you can't do this. I can't afford it. And he went and looked at my insurance chart, and he said, you're right. Your insurance doesn't pay for it. So, but if I hadn't thought to ask again, you know, and when I asked them why that happened, they said that the anesthesiologist just happened to be at the hospital that day, so they figured they would use him, but they didn't ask me if my insurance was going to cover him.
What a story. I'm kind of picturing you lying there.
I know.
Kate,
and
I mean,
why I even thought to ask again, I don't know.
So did you go home, or did you just get the procedure done without?
No, they found a nurse to give me the anesthesiology.
Okay.
The anesthesia. So, well, I mean, it's Versed. It's not really, I don't know if it's considered anesthesia.
Yeah, right.
You know?
It's just a relaxing.
But yeah, no, it was fine and it was covered. But if I hadn't thought to ask again, I would have been billed.
Well, few people would probably have the fortitude to do that, Kate. So good for you. And thanks for calling in. And Mark Hall, again, you've researched this nationally. What do you think about Kate's story and the fact that she thought about this just as she was about to go under?
Well, Lauren, like you said, I mean, my jaw is dropping, too. It's just amazing. You think you've heard it all, and then you hear yet another stunningly, startling story of the kind of thing that should never happen. But, and, you know, the lawyer in me, I'm a law professor as well as a health policy person, says, well, that the doctor should never be able to bill you for that. It's like the restaurant that brings the, you know, the course that you didn't order, and nobody wants to take a case to court to resolve this. So I think it this show and these callers are doing great public service to show that really the problem is pervasive. It even if we don't have an official count, you're just hearing it pop up in so many different ways. It's out there and it's significant. I think the other takeaway from this is, the earlier caller was talking about how fractured the payment system is, and that's part of the problem. I mean, one sort of ultimate solution would be to say there should be a single price for a colonoscopy or a surgery that should bundle everything together. We might be moving to that bundled payment system in the future, but and that would help resolve this. But in the meantime, we still have this highly fractured system that has to have some mechanism to avoid these problems.
Go ahead, Casey.
So on the subject of quantifying the scale of the problem, the insurance department, which actually is supportive and has been supportive for several years of reform in this area, they've actually taken a rare position of endorsing this proposed bill to address balance billing because they feel that it's a significant enough consumer concern. I talked to them as part of my reporting and asked them if they had any data on this, and they said that it was difficult to pin down because often people don't know to come to the insurance department with these concerns. But they also said, and this is something that I know Josh and other patients have brought up, that often people will just pay the bill or, you know, work it out individually with their insurance company. But because there's no, a lot of people think that they're just dealing with this on their own. And until they hear these kinds of stories that we're hearing from callers or other patients, they don't realize that it's actually part of a much wider kind of system-wide issue.
Well, I'm so glad you said that, Casey, because this is a question I wanted to ask everybody. So I'll start with you, Casey. What's the difference between balanced billing? Again, this, you know, seemingly slightly murky, you know, out-of-network physician giving you the anesthesia before you go have surgery from your in-network surgeon. What's the difference between that balanced billing practice and just a medical bill that seems really expensive? How do we as consumers assess that this is, oh, well, healthcare is costly and I had to seek this treatment, to, no, this is wrong. I've been overcharged in this possibly sketchy way. I mean, how do you figure that out, Casey? And I want to hear from you, Mark, and you too, Josh, but go ahead.
So I would say that balance billing is maybe a type of surprise medical bills, because there are lots of different surprises. You could go in, you know, with a procedure and you know that you're going to have to pay for it, but it might end up, you know, costing a lot more than you anticipated. And maybe that's a case where you would utilize, you know, resources that, you know, New Hampshire, for example, provides a health transparency website where you can compare the costs of different procedures across hospitals and facilities. So that's one measure to alleviate the kind of sticker shock that comes with different procedures. What balance billing is specifically is getting back to that issue that we talked about earlier, where you are getting billed for a service that you thought was going to be in network or that is not covered by your insurance network for some reason. So you are getting hit with that balance that's not covered by your insurance provider, but that, you know, might have been deemed necessary by someone involved in your care, sometimes without your consent.
So that's how you figure it out. How did you sort it out, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, just expanding on what Casey said, it's not about failing to price shop for, you can get an MRI at Concord Hospital for $2,800 or dairy imaging for $400. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about how the patient doesn't get to choose which radiologist reads his ultrasound, which pathologist does the lab work, which anesthesiologist administers the drug. It's decisions that are completely out of the patient's control that we're talking about.
It's not that you didn't do your homework.
Exactly. I mean, just look at the call you just had, Kate. I mean, a horrific story. She did more work than 99% of patients probably do and is in the position where she's on a gurney in a hospital gown and has to be thinking about the fact that she has to worry about paying for this procedure that she's already researched and already tried to prevent the causes of. Crazy. Crazy.
Go ahead, Mark. Your thoughts, too. I mean, a lot of healthcare is just expensive. You know, I've gotten a couple surprise bills myself where I look at it and I go, ooh, I should have done a little more research. I should have asked more questions. It was kind of confusing. I didn't bother looking into it further because I was busy, for goodness sake. But what's the difference between that and balanced billing, in your opinion, Mark?
Well, part of the basis for all this is the irrationality in pricing that we see so much and increasing. It started, I think, with hospitals and specialty tests, and now it's spread to specialists and other kinds of physicians, that the list price will oftentimes be not just 50% more, but or 100% more, but 200%, 300%, 400% more. The story that Casey wrote about was fivefold more. The list price is that much higher than what that same provider will willingly accept in negotiated contracts with insurance companies. So there's no rationality to charging one patient $1,600 and another patient $250. In a well functioning market. So I think it's just there's the fact that the market for medical prices works reasonably well when you have negotiations between insurance companies and providers, but when you don't, I don't know what to call it. It's not a habit, but this acceptability of charging multiple times more, I think is, to me, what is shocking, and that's what comes to light with balanced billing. The balanced billing is for the full charge, and that, you would think a discount for volume or for, you know, convenience of payment would be 20%, 50%, but it's, you know, it's 500%, and that just doesn't make sense.
Here's an email that came in from Tracy in East Kingston, who says, I'm a medical billing specialist for 17 years now in New Hampshire. I deal with collecting benefits for clients daily. It is not easy for most people to understand what to ask and if you're getting the correct answer. If you are speaking to a person with the insurance company and they do not exactly know how to find the correct answer, you could be told incorrect information and be blindsided when it comes to your coverage and billing. Tracy says, I personally had to take a lot of time to research what would be covered for myself. I called multiple times to make sure I had the correct answers. I had to request approval for the coverage that was going to be out of network so the insurance company would pay for it. Tracy says, not a lot of people know how to do this. I do not think it is fair. Tracy, thank you very much for calling. And Josh, this gets to the sort of, you know, average Joe or Jane, like just trying to figure out how to work the system, finding the time. You said earlier that you did call the insurance company, and sometimes it's the third person gives you, you know, the right answer, but as a consumer, you don't really know what the right answer is. You're kind of crossing your fingers.
Different answers from different people. How do the consumers find the time to do that? How does the consumer have the knowledge to do that? And like Casey said, how does the consumer even know that it's an option to contest these bills?
I sometimes lose patience, too, you know, through the third or fourth call to the insurance company and the phone tree and getting hung up on. And so, you know, that's maybe I should stick with it. But you just lose patience after a while.
I think, again, and not to, you know, underscore the point too strongly, but that was a medical billing specialist who said that, again, she was having trouble going through her own kind of, you know, personal navigation of the system. One of the patients who I profiled was a nurse. So, again, someone else who works in the healthcare industry. So I think it's really, really important for people and for policymakers, too, to really step back and understand how difficult this system can be to navigate for someone who is not, or it can be difficult for people who even are familiar with the way that the healthcare industry works, let alone someone who is just trying to go about their day-to-day life.
Let's try to take one more call. This is Marjorie in Lebanon. Hi, Marjorie. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thank you very much. I wanted to comment about how pervasive the practice is. I have a very healthy family of two, and both of us receive balance bills for surprise bills in this billing, balance billing practice. One was for word for word what Dan and Cheshire said, a reading of a radiology, a mammogram for myself. But more importantly, my foster child was balance billed for something that Healthy Families, which is her provider, covered. So it took me an afternoon off of work, about 3 hours on the phone, calling the emergency, the out-of-state billers who were billing for the emergency practice at my local hospital. And I could get nowhere with them. I went through a couple more calls to finally get to Healthy Families. They were super helpful. They explained everything to me, and I just used their language and went back to the original emergency room provider billing service, used the language Healthy Families explained to me that I was being billed for a balance that was over and above the approved amount that Healthy Families would pay, and the bill was zeroed out. It took, you know, all my skills and all my patience to get through these phone calls. So when you the problem is this hospital is explicitly quoted by NHPR as saying they didn't have a practice of balanced billing. And they how would they know? Because they've outsourced in the last year, they outsourced their billing practices. When I tried just to reach out to that hospital, they say on their webpage, don't call us, call these two outsourced providers.
Well, let's talk about the outsourcing again. And Mark, we talked about that a little bit earlier. Marjorie, thank you so much. And you're right. It does take a lot of time and energy sometimes to figure this out, and it's frustrating. So, Mark, on the outsourcing, we talked about this earlier, but just remind us how hospitals have increasingly used outsourced networks of docs. And, you know, is it always bad? Are there situations where it's quite helpful to both the facility itself and patients?
Many situations it is helpful because it provides for orderly coverage of an essential service that you can get your x-rays read and your pathology reports done, you know, on weekends in the middle of the night, and that there's always somebody at the emergency room and not too many people either that, you know, you're not just relying on chance and serendipity. One reason that the contracting is necessary is that increasingly physicians were reluctant to sort of take their turn, let's say in the emergency room, as a matter of kind of just community service, because many patients in the emergency room are uninsured or, you know, come in with limited ability to pay, and of course you need to treat them regardless. To spend a substantial amount of time in the emergency room is not very remunerative, so hospitals have to pay physicians extra to do that. And so one of the touchy issues here from the hospital's point of view is, well, if we let the doctors go ahead and balance bill, maybe we won't have to pay them as much extra ourselves. I don't know if that thinking is on the minds of any New Hampshire hospitals, but I've heard that with regard to, let's say, some Texas hospitals, so we'll point to another place. But that's part of the picture of what's going on, this trying to run
an institution in a way that meets all the community's needs and figure out how to get the bills paid.
Yeah, and again, in a rural state like New Hampshire, staffing is sometimes a problem. And again, we did reach out to several hospitals and provide them an opportunity to talk to us about, you know, their staffing struggles and how they view these practices, but they were unable to give us anybody. Casey, just a couple last questions for you. First of all, this story has been, it's gotten a pretty big response, maybe more than a lot of stories that you've done. What surprised you working on this?
I think that just like we've talked about the scale of the problem, I should say that I first started working on this because I saw one woman's Facebook post talking about her surprise medical bill in the Seabrook community group, which I belong to a bunch of different community groups just to kind of keep tabs on what's happening across the state. And I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. I'm looking for kind of health policy story ideas. And then I realize this is part of a much larger trend, not just happening in New Hampshire, but nationally. So I think just to emphasize what we've heard today, there can be a lot of different scenarios in which this happens. There are a lot of different ways that consumers cannot realize that they're being susceptible to this. So I think just, you know, reemphasizing the fact that this is something that is widespread, and that there are resources available for consumers to at least educate themselves about the extent of the issue, if nothing else.
And if you're like our caller from Walpole, ask while you're on the gurney getting ready to undergo your colonoscopy. Thank you all so much for being here. Mark, it was really good to talk to you. We hope to have you back. Thanks.
Thank you.
That's Mark Hall. He's a senior fellow for economic studies at the Brookings Institute. Josh Kateff, good to meet you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Josh Kateff is a New Hampshire resident who had personal experience with balance billing, as he told us, and he sat on a state study committee working on that bill that we heard about from Representative Luno. Casey McDermott, thank you once again for helping us out.
Thank you.
That's Casey McDermott, reporter for NHPR. You can read her coverage of balance billing in New Hampshire on our website, nhpr.org. We're still taking your questions and comments for Governor Sununu's interview tomorrow. Send them in by email, exchange@nhpr.org, or go to our website and find out how to leave a voicemail. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.